From somewhere in Northeast Indiana, Mike Davidson lives. And now your host of the podcast, Mike Davidson.
Good news this week. Can't believe the dude's gone. And I gotta admit, at times like this, I really do miss Norm Macdonald. I can't believe the guy's been gone for damn near 2.5 years now. Insane. Hell yes, Mr. Rob Roop. It is finally me, Mike. This is Mike Davidson Lives, the name of the podcast. Thank you for downloading, listening, all that good stuff as we hang out for about half an hour. That okay? That cool? I think it's cool. Finally get to do it. And I usually try to keep a pretty good schedule, but the last couple days, like Wednesday, me and the wife hung out Wednesday night. We watched a movie finally, and then Thursday, I just felt like crap. But the movie we're watching is she was able to get the DVD of The Iron Claw. Great movie. Great film. If you haven't watched it yet about the Von Erich family, do so. It's available on streaming. You can check it out from your library. I don't know where the hell you can rent it, but it's good watching. So we watched that, and then Thursday I just wasn't feeling well. Had a humongous headache. Just terrible. Woke up with it Friday morning. Took some Tylenol for it, got to work, and as soon as I got to work, my back started throbbing, my lower back. It was terrible, still is. I worked through the day. I didn't go home or anything like that. I was on my feet all day, but it was weird. Like, I could feel it kind of sore, and then sometimes when I would shift my weight, like, it would just halt me. Yeah, this is what 44 is like. I can't wait until I'm 54. God willing, I get that far ahead. But I'm up here recording late Friday, early Saturday. No obligations Saturday morning, which means instead of coffee or a glass of water, I got a nice cold mug of beer right here. And I'm doing what I can. Some good news on the Hazel front. As you know, she had her anoids out, and she's doing okay with that. And she had new tubes put in her ears. Took her to the ENT. Couple days back, Wednesday, and she's doing fine. Tubes are holding. She can hear very well. I was in the room with her when she was doing her hearing screening, and it's kind of like a recording studio for musicians, right? So she's in there. She's got the headphones on, and the tech is in the other room, and she will, do the beeps until Hazel raised her hand. She did that. But she also did, okay, I'm going to say some words, and when I say the word, you know, if she says airplane, Hazel has to say airplane, right? The first, and I don't hear anything really through the headphones, but I guess the first word she said to Hazel was ice cream, and Hazel said, oh yeah, I like ice cream, and it was just kind of this random thing. But she did very well, and it was one of those things where it's like Wednesday morning, you know, she's not in school. I thought, okay, we'll go out for an early lunch, and I'll take her back. So we're at McDonald's, and I order the food. We're sitting down, and my wife calls me. She goes, how'd it go, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, oh, by the way, make sure you go straight back to school because the doctor's note is only good for so much time. And this is a little rant I've got about it because it's not like I took Hazel to the gas station, locked her in the car for like 45 minutes, and was playing scratch-offs at the counter, buying cartons of cigarettes. It was, oh, hey, you did well on your thing. Let's go get something to eat, and then I'll take you to school. We weren't playing hooky. Eating is not hooky. I mean, granted, McDonald's is not the healthiest crap in the world. Last time I ate their fries, they damn near killed me. But she likes the stuff. And I like hanging out with her. It's not a big deal. I don't know why schools make a big deal about it. If it's like a half hour to an hour after the doctor's appointment, not a big deal. But if it's like, okay, you missed the entire day of school and you're healthy, or half a day, then you get concerned. Me feeding my daughter is not a concern. But I guess some people see that as truancy. I don't. She's in pre-K, for Christ's sake. I mean, there's no big deal here. But I am ranting a little bit about it. By the way, earlier tonight, RIP to the late, great Eleanor Coppola. That is Mrs. Frances Ford Coppola, 87 years old. No word as to what she passed away from. Of course, her husband, the famous director of two really great Godfather movies, Apocalypse Now, and some other fine films. Her daughter, Sofia Coppola, also an accomplished filmmaker. And she herself, I mean, they met on the set of a film. She has some film chops, and she was one of the directors of Heart of Darkness, which is basically the behind-the-scenes biography of making of Apocalypse Now and how hellacious that was for Francis Ford Coppola and all involved. So even as her husband obtained all this fame, she was still staying active with some filmmaking projects of her own. And, condolences to the Coppola family because they've made some contributions to American cinema. A little heartbroken about Purdue, just UConn, back-to-back champions, and they were a freight train throughout the NCAA tournament. Zach Edey, I thought, played pretty well, but the rest of the team stunk on ice. And they lost the championship game. And I felt bad for my dad because, I mean, this guy is a through-and-through Boilermaker fan. I mean, he got his master's from Purdue. Year in, year out, he roots on the basketball team. He roots on the football team. The biggest thing, really, outside of this, would be Drew Brees leading the Purdue Boilermakers to the Rose Bowl years back. So for Purdue to finally get to the championship game and just kind of fall short, it's kind of a hard one, but still not a bad season for them. But the thing that kind of sucks is, like, they brought up the fact that both Purdue lost on the men's side, Iowa lost on the women's side. Neither the women's or basketball programs of the Big Ten have won a championship in the last 24 years. And this is supposed to be a major conference in sports. What the hell? And speaking of beating, women beat the men in ratings. The women's game, the women's championship, was Sunday afternoon. Iowa falling to South Carolina, but it was in the afternoon. I think about 18, 19 million people watched that game, as opposed to, like, the, was it 14 million that tuned in for the men's game. The men's game had a slight uptick in viewership, which is good. But two things as to why the women drew more than the men. One, obviously, Caitlin Clark. The second, they didn't tip off at 1:37 in the morning. They might as well tip off at 1:37 in the morning. The actual men's game tipped off at 9:20 Eastern Standard Time. That's crazy. On a Monday night. For them to get north of 14 million viewers on a work night, on a non-holiday, that's pretty impressive. But still, bring that back. Have them tip off at 8:15. Please, for the love of crap, just have them tip off at 8:15. Speaking of Caitlin Clark, looks like she's going to the WNBA. She's going to be an Indiana Fever player. When you're with the Pacers, you're a Pacer. If you're with the Fever, are you a Fever? Fever being the collective group. What would be an individual member of the Fever? But then again, you're part of the Miami Heat. Are you a Heat? Or just, I don't know. Okay, I'm getting hung up on semantics here. It's the beer talking. But Caitlin Clark, I mean, you know, she's had a bunch of former college players hating on her and some WNBA players hating on her currently. And they said, yeah, when she comes in the game, it's not going to be like her dominating much freshmen. We're going to come at her. You know, it almost kind of threatening. And I'm thinking to myself, at one point, Caitlin Clark was a freshman at Iowa, and she grew into the role that she's in now. So, yeah, obviously, when she's a rookie, she goes in the WNBA, there's going to be some growing pains. And if she's really as good as advertised, she'll learn to adapt. It might be rough starting out, but, you know, she'll roll with it. And I'm not saying that you go easy on her because she's Caitlin Clark, because when you're on the court, no matter who you are as an athlete, you always want to win. You always want to play to win. So there's that. But this coming after her sounds kind of like, okay, Caitlin Clark is going to women's prison. You know what I mean? It sounds unnecessarily intimidating. And the thing about it, too, is this is, as my dad would say, cutting off your nose in spite of your face. If Caitlin Clark comes to the WNBA and, brings viewers with her, has people watching these games, why would you do what? Why would you try to take her out? I'm not saying let her win. If you want to beat her, that's fine. If you beat her, that's fine. But, you know, roughing her up, I mean, what good does this do? If anything, this would make more people tune away from the WNBA. Again, I don't get it. If she's as good as advertised, she'll do fine. If not, well, what do you got to worry about? But it's just stupid stuff to roll your eyes at. By the way, fun thing to laugh at, remind me to link this up on the Mike Davidson podcast page. There's going to be a couple links I want to add to that. This Instagram page dedicated to all of LeBron James's lies. And we're not talking about, you know, arguing with the refs and flopping on the court and all that stuff, but just in interviews in general. And there's a nice little montage that gives you a snippet of stuff that he has lied about. And, oh, God. It is it's pretty damn funny. I think my favorite one, and this was when NBA, during the playoffs, they were in bubble mode back in 2020, right? They were in bubble mode because no one was allowed to go to the games, stay away, social distance, all that other bullshit that we all now look back at and laugh. And, of course, we had some racial unrest in 2020 because, as you know, it was an election year. But LeBron James trying to come off as this leader. He's reading this book, the autobiography of Malcolm X, which has sold millions and millions of copies. It's a well-known autobiography. And he's got it open up to the beginning. And he's, yeah, well, what you're reading there, LeBron, as the journalists are asking, oh, yeah, this Malcolm X autobiography, it's great. Well, what's your favorite part? And he just starts yammering about, well, you know, the stuff he said in the 60s, the quotes in the 60s. Like, he can't name anything specific because, again, he's just opened it up in front of the cameras. Also, saying that he likes The Godfather, but he can't quote name a single quote from the movie. You can rattle off at least five freaking quotes from The Godfather, you know, leave the gun, take the cannolis. I'll make him an offer he can't refuse. It's not personal. This is business. Now who's being naive? Bada bing. And just Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes. It goes on and on and on. That's a true story, Kate. All right. So, yeah, he's never watched The Freaking Godfather, which in itself is an actual crime. Okay. Eclipse. It happened. It was cool. The last podcast, I talked about how the press went overkill with it. And I was thinking, you know, because I watched it from work. I had the special glasses and everything, and it was pretty cool. Fort Wayne, where we are, was kind of on that northern edge. Like, it was right on that line of totality versus degrees of blockage. And I think we were at 99.9%. There's a little bit of sun just sticking out. But I kind of took my glasses off when I was looking away from the sun because obviously you can see the microphone in front of me. But you look to the south and east, it was totally dark. But you look north and west, and you could see daylight. And it was so friggin' weird, man. It seemed like something out of a painting. And I tried to take pictures on my cell phone, but unfortunately, I failed to realize that they're cell phone pictures. So it looked great. But what my thought was about the whole damn thing was, okay, you had all these news outlets doing live coverage of the eclipse, right? Of the moon blocking the sun. And, oh, you're watching us as we're talking about this thing. And I thought back, Paul Poteet, who used to be a weatherman down in Indianapolis, he's actually from Northeast Indiana. Funny guy. He's one of the few news type people that can actually be funny without, you know, prompter corny reads. He's like quick on his feet, funny. But I remember him saying something about like what his mentor Bob McLean told him. If you're unsure about what the radar is telling you, just step outside and see what the weather's doing. So you have all these people, all these news outlets telling you all about this eclipse when all you have to do is step outside and look at it with your special glasses. There's no reason for them to go full eclipse coverage as it's happening. They might as well just go to reruns of I Love Lucy or Andy Griffith, like most, you know, daytime television does anymore because nobody watches talk shows anymore. But that's live coverage of the eclipse. Jesus. When you think about it, it is pretty stupid. You step outside and look at it. There it is. By the way, a Mexican news network got clowned because they had footage of what they thought was the eclipse. There's the sun. And somebody showed their testicles blocking the sun. So apparently it's not the moon that we were all looking at Monday. I thought it was great. By the way, John Mellencamp, still a dick. You may have recalled him a few weeks ago acting like an ass in Toledo because somebody said, play songs. And he decided to, you know, threaten him by saying, hey, go find him. Tell him I'll meet him outside. Somebody else said something. Oh, I'm going to cut 10 songs out of the set. And then he plays a little Jack and Diane, walks off. And then 5 minutes later, comes back. And it's just really awkward for the audience. And, of course, his reasoning was like, hey, man, I'm not for everybody. I don't do concerts. I do performances. And, you know, if you're going to get drunk and rowdy, you know, don't come to my show. Okay, fine. But he said, as I made mention earlier, the guy was obnoxious, but he wanted to hear your music. And if he was so damn annoying, you could have just ignored him, continued on, and played for the thousands of fans that weren't taunting you instead of making it just like a really weird, awkward Thanksgiving dinner where politics just got discussed. You know, but he did this. It's just this cranky, entitled old man, of course, not apologizing for what he did to the other fans. He doesn't have to apologize necessarily to the idiot that, you know, Kat called him. But when he made it like that and, in a way, started taking it out on the audience, what's the point of spending money to see someone do that? That's the point I'm making. Morgan Wallen, by the way, did Morgan Wallen things earlier this week in Nashville. He was throwing shit off of a bar and got arrested, and he's looking at some charges. I know, it's shocking that a country star, country musician, would act like a country musician. But, you know, after this and that whole N-bomb thing he got involved in a few years back, maybe it's time to say goodbye to booze, Morgan. What do you say? I know I'm saying drinking a beer as I'm doing this, but I'm also not throwing furniture out my window at the moment. I'm just yammering into a microphone, making fun out of you, making an ass of yourself in Nashville. And this was like, and I can't keep every country music star's name straight because that's not my wheelhouse, but it just seems like everybody that's ever been a country musician, a country singer, has a bar in Nashville. Taylor Swift doesn't because she's no longer a country star, by the way. But, yeah, there's that. The National Association of Theater Owners, NATO for short, their president agrees with me. A big point that I've been making with films lately is you don't have to spend a shitload of money to make a good film. You don't have to make a blockbuster to make money back. And his point at a recent conference of NATO in Las Vegas, all conferences are either in Las Vegas or Indianapolis for some odd reason. His point is like, look, you don't have to do blockbusters. I love blockbuster movies, but you can do mid-range films, small-budget films, and still get a decent product. Diversity. Diverse product. And I'm not talking DEI diversity, but he's just saying, you know, a diverse range of films to bring people in will also work. He's absolutely 100% right. Because King was Dial of Destiny took damn near $400 million to make. $80 million in post-production to make Harrison Ford look young again. And my point, when I made that point during the, was a couple podcasts ago, Disney could have made 4 Oppenheimers for that. Easy. Mm. But that's not the route that they went. They beat a dead horse. And if you're a movie theater owner, you reap the whirlwind of exhibiting that stuff. And if you're not getting the ticket sales, it's kind of hard to keep your theater open. That's why he's saying, hey guys, don't look to make $250 million, $300 million, $400 million movies that may or may not make their money back. And if you keep putting your eggs in the basket of one big film and that film flops, well, nobody wins. That's his point. I think it's a good point. It is linked up on the Mike Davidson Facebook page. All right, a couple big stories. Hey, I don't know if you heard this. O.J. Simpson's dead. Yeah, 76 years old. Yeah, like I said, Norm MacDonald would have a field day with this if he was still around. And I will also link up Norm MacDonald's supercut of him on SNL Weekend Update, just shit-talking the shit out of O.J. Simpson, just beating him, trashing him with all these jokes. It's glorious. But O.J. Died of cancer, which is weird because, you know, the last video he put on social media, he said, hey, no, nothing's wrong, everything's good, I'm in great health. I just don't believe that O.J. would lie to the public like that about something like that. I mean, I know health is a private issue, but it just seems so beneath O.J. to lie about something like that, you know? Something life or death, especially. Lie. O.J. Weird. You know, and of course everybody had their 2 cents about O.J. Simpson. You know, obviously, you know, of course, the racial divide, the economic divide of the early 90s. But here's my thing about O.J. Regardless if you think he killed his wife or if he, you know, murdered his wife, his ex-wife, it doesn't matter. The book that he tried to put out, If I Did It, you remember that? And the Goldman and the Brown families, they sued to keep that from happening and all that stuff. But O.J., basically, about this person he was married to, the mother of his kids, sat down and talked out this idea about, well, if I was to kill my wife, this person that was a big part of my family, my life, if I did kill her and this dude that brought her glasses. That just seems like sociopathic behavior right there, even if he was innocent. You know, tone deaf. There was something off about the dude. And that murder trial and everything that followed pretty much proved it. That, well, not it. Thank you, jury. But that there was just something off about O.J. Simpson. And that affable personality that you would see on television. But we really haven't learned that lesson because we keep seeing people on TV and trying to live vicariously through them and think they're great people. I just saw in passing the Golden Bachelor couple that just got married this past season. Whatever their names are. They're divorced. They were people that tuned in to see this fake happiness, and it didn't even last half a year, for crying out loud. But that's over, and so is O.J. Simpson. Okay, so before all that stuff happened with the eclipse and all, this story, this is a water is wet story, but I found it very, very affirming. Yuri Berliner, I think he's a managing economics editor at NPR. Yeah, I know, NPR. I don't really care for NPR all that much either. He actually did a whistleblower article for Free Press, which Bari Weiss, she runs it. She's left the center, but she's also somebody that has noticed how biased the media has gotten as of late. And so has he, Yuri. I don't know if he's still employed at NPR after this thing dropped, but basically he's saying, you know how you thought NPR was biased all these years, left-leaning, pro-government and all that? It's true. And he says it's gotten worse since 2020. And I have this linked up on the Mike Davidson Facebook page as well. Some highlights from this op-ed here. See, where are we at? Back in 2011, although NPR's audience tilted a bit to the left, it still bore a resemblance to America at large. 26% of the listeners described themselves as conservative. 23% described themselves as middle of the road, 37% as liberal. By 2023, the picture was completely different. Only 11% described themselves as very or somewhat conservative, 21% middle of the road, 67% of the listeners were very liberal, very or somewhat liberal. We weren't just losing conservatives, we were also losing moderates and traditional liberals, as he put it. What else do we got here? Another interesting tidbit. Sorry. In recent years, I've struggled to answer the question as to what's been happening with NPR. Concerned by the lack of viewpoint diversity, I looked at voter registration for our newsroom in D.C., where NPR is headquartered and many of us lived. I found 87 registered Democrats working in editorial positions and zero Republicans. None. And to kind of drive the point home, he wrote more extensively about some of the stories that NPR has covered in recent years. Persistent rumors that Trump campaign colluded with Russia over the election 2016 became catnip that drove the reporting. At NPR, we hitched our wagon to Trump's most visible antagonist, Representative Adam Schiff. Schiff, who was a top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, became NPR's guiding hand, its ever-present muse. By my count, NPR interviewed Schiff 25 times about Trump and Russia. 25 times? During many of those conversations, Schiff alluded the purported evidence of collusion. Schiff talking points became the drumbeat for NPR news reports. But when the Mueller report came out and found no credible evidence of collusion, NPR's coverage was notably sparse. Russiagate quietly faded from our programming. So there was not even an apology, a retraction, or anything, Mr. Berliner is saying. And he goes on to talk about some of the stuff that pertains to Hunter Biden's laptop, COVID, and Israel with the post-October 7th fallout, them versus Hamas, and how everything's so heavy-handed and biased. Now, he himself went on to say that he doesn't believe in defunding NPR because he himself is a lefty, and he even admits it. He says it wouldn't solve all the problems for NPR, but why are we even giving these guys money if they're not going to be fair and balanced? Personally, I don't think any news outlet should be getting government money because when they get government money, they tend to be less biased anyway. Not that there is any such thing as unbiased in media. But he is right about one point. It would not change the perception that NPR has about news. And what's infuriating to me, they, along with many news outlets, don't have much respect for their audience if they feel like they have to hide things or push things that are untrue to the audience and not let them make their own decisions. I think also that he made mention of the Hunter Biden story and the laptop, and one of the editors says, we can't really go with this because this might help Trump's chances of re-election. Well, that's not for you to decide. And I myself am not a big Trump guy, but I'm also not a very big fan of news media because they do crap like this. And I'm looking at all this, and it's just like, yeah, this is why people do vote for Trump. This is why people have a big problem with media bias. This is why your aunt keeps forwarding you those chain mails in email accounts, because you don't have honest brokers in media anymore. That's gone to the curbside, ladies and gents. All right, a couple more things before I call it an episode here. Bad food. Let's talk about bad food. What is this? Consumer Reports have found that the Lunchables that are being served at your kids' lunch times. What? Lunch? Yeah, they have high portions of sodium and lead. Remember when everybody made a big effing deal about your kid getting fat from chocolate milk, or all those kids dying from peanut butter, and here we are, we're handing them lead-tainted bologna and crackers? Yeah, it might be a better idea to, might be a better idea just to have them pack their lunch. Is that allowed anymore? By the way, they're saying now that if you substitute, instead of sausage and meat in your lasagna, you put anchovies in it, this is better for you. It actually helps lower your blood sugar and everything. I say it saves more lives because it makes food that people normally enjoy terrible, and therefore they wouldn't eat it. No, you don't do that. That's gross. By the way, you know what they call lasagna in Chicago, right? Pizza. And finally, there's an Italian potato chip company in danger, in trouble. I wouldn't say danger. I hope they're not in danger, but they did something stupid. They did a commercial on television where they ran out of union wafers, communion wafers at mass, you know, wine and all that. And they substituted with potato chips. And of course, Italy being a very Catholic country, not too keen on that. So there's been some backlash and cancel this, cancel that. I myself don't think it's a good idea to do this commercial because it makes the potato chips look sinful. I mean, it makes it look like it makes it look like something that would cause gluttony, because after all, you can't just have one. You know, you start serving potato chips at a church, who knows what happens next? Blood orgies? Gotta nip that in the bud. With all that said and done, until next time, stay fresh.
You've been listening to Mike Davidson Live. Be sure to check him out on social media. Like him at facebook.com/mdavidsonlives. Follow him on Twitter. Look for @DavidsonLives.